Thank you so much for those of you that have been able to go out and have been inviting people, and I'm excited. I'm so excited to see what God's going to do. I don't know if you've noticed the theme on Sunday nights. Every time I go to study something, the Lord, He's bringing me back to the family. And so for the last, really, since I've been here, Sunday nights, we've just been talking about the family. I think it's so important. And even Brother Leif prayed, as he's praying this, God does something in the life of his kids this week. I've been thinking the same thing as well, so I appreciate that. I want to talk about something tonight that is so important when raising children. It's something you cannot buy. It's not something you can go out to the store and purchase or get on eBay and hope to get it for the buy it now price or lower than that, or I guess now they have second chance if you miss out and you want to get it anyways, and they have all these things that you can buy something like it or something from there. But I want to talk about something that has to be earned. And I'm not talking about respect necessarily, although that comes along with it. What I want to talk about tonight is influence. You see, influence only happens over time. It's something that can't be bought. It's something that you can't go out and just purchase, but you can, over time, earn a place in your child's right or life to have influence. You know, several years ago, a fellow by the name of William Bennett. He was a former Secretary of Education and a drug czar for the president. He also authored a book called The Book of Virtue. He admitted to losing more than $8 million in casino gambling. Bennett would receive as much as $50,000 in speaking fees to address conservative groups on the moral issues that face America, and the money he earned would quickly end up in the pockets of people who promote the type of values that he railed against. And Bennett's typical day of gambling would have him heading to the high limit room of the nearest casino and blowing money on video poker with $500 a pull slots. Now, this man was one of Bill Clinton's, the former president, biggest critics during President Clinton's moral failure. And of course, his own credibility then was destroyed by his high stakes habit. When asked if he was a hypocrite, Bennett said he was not because he did not claim to be a moral authority. But then again, Bennett also claimed not to have a gambling problem. Turn your Bibles to Genesis chapter 19. Genesis chapter 19. I want you to think about two campfires. I don't know if you've been camping. I love to camp. I haven't been able to go camping for the last couple years. We like to go as a family. And I went camping, I guess, last year with my father-in-law and my son, but I like to go with my wife, and for the last couple years, every time we think we're ready to go camping, she's pregnant. And so we don't go, or we just had a kid. I can't wait to go camping again, and campfires are my favorite part of camping. I mean, I just love to see things burn, right, fellas? That's just good stuff. But I want you to think about these two different campfires. One is a man with his two daughters, who because of the sin that was promulgated there, his daughters are pregnant. Thinking about the loss of their mother, of their family, of their friends, all because this man had lost. On the other end of the spectrum, you have a man at the end of this campfire, around with his three sons and their wives, giving glory to God because he had saved them from the terrible flood that engulfed the world. In both instances, both families were at stake. What was the difference? One man had influence with his family, and one did not. Can I tell you today, we are at a peril in this country with our families. And it is the influence that you will wield with your family that will determine if they get on the boat or if they stay in Sodom. Verse 14 of chapter 19 said, Lot went out and spake unto his sons-in-law, which married his daughters, and said, Up, get you out of this place, for the Lord will destroy the city. But he seemed as one that mocked unto his son-in-law. You know the story of Lot, how that Abraham and Lot had gone together and their flocks had begun to grow and they were too big supposedly to rest together. And so they said, we're going to go in opposite directions. And Abraham, in great deference to his nephew, said, you pick which way you want to go. And it appeared as though Lot had already been eyeing the fields. And he said, listen, I'm going to go where the green pastures are. And he pitched his tent towards Sodom. You ever notice that? Never said that he went to Sodom. It said that he pitched his tent towards Sodom. But by the time you catch up with Lot and his family, he's already not only in Sodom, but he's sitting at the gate, which is a seat of authority there. Because of that, he compromised those things that he said he wants to believe. Matter of fact, unless it were for 2 Peter 2:7, we'd never even know that Lot was a believer. It talks about just Lot escaped. It's not talking about only him escaping. It's saying that he was justified, saying that he was a believer in the promises of God. And just as Abraham believed God and it was accounted to him for righteousness, so did Lot, but you never know it by his lifestyle. You know, a lot of people admit that they do things that they wouldn't want their children doing, now or when they grow up. And how many parents smoke when telling their children never to do this? Or how many parents are taking a drink while telling their children the dangers of alcohol? How many parents condemn their children's lies while telling lies of their own? And how many parents are asked by their children, did you do that when you were mine? Listen, there's this terrible thing called hypocrisy. There's the do as I say and not as I do philosophy, and it's not going to work in raising children. At some point, children will call you out on the carpet, so to speak. They're going to use your hypocrisy to discredit your authority and spoil your credibility. You know, credibility is the capital and currency with which you purchase influence and guidance in the lives of your children. When your children are young, you can physically force them to do what you want them to do. Listen, if they don't clean their room and you've told them, you can go and you can take care of that. By the way, I think it's biblical to use a pattern. We ought to stop recording for a minute. We've gotten so far away from what there's two pendulums, and they swung both ways, it seems like. One is a permissiveness, and it's like there's no discipline in the house at all. And the other one is the authoritarianism, where it's do as I say no matter what, or you'll face the consequences, and there's no love in that. That's not biblical parenting. Biblical parenting, certainly there is discipline, but it is discipling, and it's in love. And we must have a balance in this thing. As I said, when your children are young, you can physically force them to do what you want. If they don't clean the room, then you can march them in there and you can physically help them, or you can apply the seed of knowledge, of correction, on the seed of understanding there. But the point is that when children are of a certain age, they can be and should be to be obedient. And they're made to do some things that are unpleasant for them. It's part of the teaching and the molding and the discipleship. We all have things that in life that we don't enjoy doing, but we have to do it. You know, as your children grow older, and there's parents in here that know this much more well than I, but when they become bigger, there'll be a loss of physical advantage. You don't tell a 17-year-old to go clean his room or else, because he may get the paddle out of your. Now, that's probably not going to happen, but you understand what I'm saying. There comes a time where the physical advantage wanes, but by then you should have built up a relationship with that child to where your influence now is taking the reins of where the correction used to happen. There has to be a transfer, because one day every child wakes up and realizes that their parents are human. Do you realize that there are no perfect children? Sorry, Bill. Do you know why? Because there's no perfect parents. We are all cursed with sin. And so we unfortunately pass some of our same deficiencies down to our children. We try to minimize those as much as we can. So there must be a transition of some sort during our life from a physical correction to one of guidance and influence. You ought to speak and be willing to speak very frankly about this subject. Why? Because we have to help this generation to realize that that when their kids realize they're not perfect, that you can still parent them. I was in a church once, and as a youth pastor, I was in shock and dismay when a parent came to me and we're talking about an issue, and the mother said, "Well, I really can't tell her not to do that because that's things I was doing when I was her age." And I thought, wow, you know, there's a lot of things I did that there's no way I'd let my kids do. Why? Because I'm saved now, first of all. And second of all, despite my moral failures as a kid, does not abrogate me from the responsibility that I have to help my children to come up to a higher moral standard than what I was held to. That's our job as parents. So there's a difference between a hypocritical lifestyle and a hypocritical moment, if you will. A big difference, actually. A lifestyle that is consistently contradictory to what you tell your children will undermine the influence and authority over them. And let me tell you, this is the most a dangerous type of hypocrisy. That's what Lot was living in. He was, in his heart, it talks about how he was vexed every single day because of the lifestyle that he was living and the things that he saw and the culture that he was partaking of. He was absolutely vexed because of that, but he didn't do anything about it. Just kept going there day after day after day, being vexed every single day. Boy, asking questions like this. I wonder when my kids are going to start serving God. I wonder when things are going to start changing with my family. You know those questions are pointless and useless? Most why questions are, I'll just tell you that. Because they don't accomplish anything. We need to ask questions like this. How can I help my children? How can I influence my children more for the Lord? How can I better have this thing called credibility in my life so that when I am talking to them about spiritual things, I will have some influence in their life? What can I do right now from this point forward to build credibility with my children? Now, those are some of the things that Lot should have been asking. But instead, he was out at the gate and kind of living the life of someone who has some prestige and some renown. He was 10,000 miles away from where he should have been. Listen, he didn't, not only that, but I think about the text in Genesis where Abraham's nephew had chosen a lifestyle that undermined his influence for God and his family. In our text, his family laughed at him. Because of his warning, Lot lost his entire family one way or another. Think of the situation that Lot finds himself after the judgment of God has fallen. Only his two daughters made it out alive. And now both are pregnant with his child. His loss of influence in his family's lives leaves no doubt about the depravity, by the way, of mankind. What caused him to lose his influence for God in their lives? Number one, he did not live what he believed. He did not live what he believed. The only way that, as I said, we know that Lot was a believer is by God's pronouncement in 2 Peter 2:7. It says, "And he delivered just Lot, vexed with the filthy conversation of the wicked." You know, it's difficult trying to tell your children not to yell when you're yelling at them. It's difficult to get your children to understand that what you're doing isn't good for them. If they started doing it. Listen, parents aren't perfect. But if we aren't trying to live a life that is pleasing to the Lord, if we're not trying to live the life that we're trying to tell our children to live, your children will disregard what you say and instead they'll listen to what you do. One old adage said, "What you're doing is so loud I can't hear what you're saying." Now, you probably guessed that I'm a proponent for bus routes. I can't wait till we can get something going to get some people and young kids from the neighborhood to come in here. I think that's important, to breathe life into a church. But I'll tell you, I worked with a guy at a church who had been in youth ministry for 30 years, and I went out visiting with him one time. And we went to some of the more rundown places where you're more apt to get kids that really are willing, where the kids, the parents are willing to send their kids in, and you understand how that works. I remember coming up, and this guy looked gruff and rough, and he started coming over towards our van. He looked kind of menacing and threatening. And the guy in charge of our youth ministry up there, his name was Ted. We called him Mr. Ted. Everybody for 30 years has been calling him Mr. Ted. And that guy looked in, and he had this big old gruff beard, and he looked like he was about my age or a little bit older. And he said, "Are you Mr. Ted?" He said, "I remember riding your bus." It was amazing. Now, I'll be honest with you, he wasn't living for the Lord, but he heard the gospel. And he wanted his kids now to ride the bus to come in. Can I tell you, there's a generational gap there. Why? Because what he is living is not being demonstrated to his kid. One of the reasons that we have a bus route, or that we will have a bus route, certainly is to reach the kid. But do you know what the purpose is? It's to reach the parent. Because if you can reach the parents, then that kid has a much better chance of not just getting saved, but of growing up and living for the Lord. Think of a fellow by the name of Philip Rogers that I knew when I lived in Tennessee. His mom and dad were the janitors for the maintenance and janitorial crew for this big church in Tennessee. And he was going to Bible college. He was leaving for Bible college, and he'd gotten back right before we had left for Bible college. And I had a chance to talk to him. I didn't realize this the whole time I knew him, but he was a bus kid. And he'd gotten saved, and his parents had gotten saved because he got saved. It doesn't always work that way, but that's the goal. And here's a young man that is going off to Bible college and coming back to serve the Lord, and his parents are faithfully serving the Lord in the church. Why? Because, I think, because they started setting the right example. They started showing what the priority was and what was important in life. And of course, that trickled down then to that young man who had gotten saved and said, "Listen, this is the real deal." His parents had credibility with him. You know, even knowing this, we as parents make critical errors in judgment and trying to justify or excuse our lifestyles to our own children. And don't think that your children are going to be convinced by your words when your actions tell a different tale. You know, when I think about the Pharisees, and I'm sure we'll talk about them at some point in some study, but if you study them at all, you'll find out that they were right doctrinally. I mean, they believed in a personal redeemer. They had this idea. I mean, they believed in a resurrection. They believed that in the law, and they tried to live a holy, separated life. You know, Jesus never condemned them for their doctrinal stance. Not one time. You know what he always condemned them for over and over and over again? It's because the hidden man of the heart didn't match out to what they were trying to portray on the outside. That means if you're trying to teach your kids not to use filthy words, don't watch a movie or a TV show that's going to bring that kind of language into the house. If you're teaching them not to blaspheme God, which you ought to be, don't listen to music that mocks his teaching. If you're trying to teach them that certain things are a sin, don't sit down and watch a sitcom or a TV show that glorifies those things that God has condemned. You know, there's something more. I've been mentioning a lot of the exterior things that you can do. You know, really what has to be dealt with is the hidden man of the heart. Because as a parent, if you're craving those things, and you're thinking that I can just do those things when my son or my daughter's not around, then there's still a fundamental problem. And let me tell you, your kids will find out. That verse in Numbers chapter 23 where it says, "Be sure your sin will find you out," it will. Oh, I heard a terrible, tragic story. That's a little bit older. You'll tell by the story. But this fellow went to camp, and he was talking to a counselor. Just a young boy, he said that he came home one day and he wanted to watch a movie, and so he'd seen all the movies downstairs, and so he went up and he found a whole case of movies in his dad's bedroom in the closet, and they had all Disney titles on them. And so he threw one in, and it was probably exactly what you're thinking I'm going to say it was. It was deplorable. And so now, this young child had seen something that he will never be able to unsee. Listen, I don't think, and I hope that we wouldn't have that problem, but we need to be sure that we are living a life that builds credibility, that will then allow us to have the right kind of influence in our children's lives. Lot possibly assumed that his children would learn the right lesson from his bad example. Let me tell you, that is rarely true. How many parents abuse their children because they were abused? There's a cycle involved in that. How many people get a divorce even after knowing the pain that their parents' divorce caused them? And occasionally, someone will vow not to be like their parents, and in trying to fulfill that promise, they may go to the opposite extreme. Let me tell you, this can be just as bad. I mentioned this earlier. A child who is under an uncaring authoritarian will then become a pleaser to their children and never discipline or correct their own children, who then grow up a disappointment to them. So we rarely learn the right lesson from being the wrong example. And so if you're taking notes, write this down. The best lessons are best learned from the best examples. We're not perfect. Nobody is. But we ought to be walking in integrity before the Lord. You know, think about David and his problem with lust and Bathsheba. As I said, it's all about the hidden man of the heart as well. You know, some of the repercussions of that, I believe, were Amnon. What did he do? He raped his own half-sister. Further on down the line, Solomon, who never met a concubine he didn't want, right? He had a problem with lust. And I wonder sometimes if it wasn't growing up in a house where the father had a problem with lust. Now, I'm thankful that David confessed it, he got it right, and he moved on. But I want to be careful about what we pass down, what I pass down to my son and to my daughter. Well, you talk about making it a matter of prayer. Parents, that's the first step that we need to have in raising children. Calling out to God. Turn very quickly over to Genesis chapter 7. Genesis chapter 7. Verse 13. God said unto Noah, "The end of all flesh is come before me, for the earth is filled with violence through them, and behold, I will destroy them with the earth." I told you, in both cases, judgment was pending. For one, it was the entire world in the balance. For the other, it was the city and his family. But we just spent some time looking at Lot and his results. Let's just take just a minute or two and look at Noah and his results. You know, before he ever got on the ark, he was surrendered to God to the best of his ability. He started on a project for God that had never been seen before, building this huge sailing vessel. By the way, he didn't go to the coast to build it. He was miles and miles away from the coast. And I think it was probably the craziest thing he ever attempted in his life. But he did it because he knew that God wanted him to do it. You know, man, don't ever be afraid to do something that God has called you to do, no matter how crazy everybody else thinks it is. You know, we need to be surrendered. We need to be surrendered. Now, I'm not talking about just salvation. I'm talking about giving him everything and accomplishing some things for God that your family maybe would think would be crazy. But allow them to see that God is real in your life. Allow God to be real in your life. Have some goals for God this year. Then share them with your family. Maybe it's, you know what, we're going to start memorizing some verses. Well, that puts me under conviction. I heard that earlier this week. We just had a family devotion. I don't remember when it was. It was a while ago. We're sharing our goals. What is our goals going to be this year? Probably towards the beginning of the year when we were talking about that. Hey, I'm going to try to read through the Bible this year. Or I think, you know, somebody in our family did that last year. Or maybe I'm going to look at the Gospels and really try to harmonize them and spend some time. Or I'm really going to really try to expand my prayer life this year. I'll tell you, take some transparency on the part of us as parents that admit that we're not praying for an hour a day and reading six chapters of our Bible. But let me tell you, if you want credibility, if you want influence in your child's life, you're going to have to be real with your kids. You can't just paint everything over with a broad brush and just tell them that, hey, you know what, as far as spiritual things go, I'm good to go, and just move on. Listen, no, they're going to see right through that. They're going to see right through that. Noah was outwardly as well as inwardly serving the Lord. In 2 Peter 2:5, it says, "And spare not the old world, but save Noah, the eighth person, a preacher of righteousness, bringing the flood upon the world of the ungodly." We talk about the hidden man of the heart. It talks about wanting to please God. Okay? Noah was consistent. He had failures. He had shortcomings. But he was plodding along on the road of life. And there's a time in every child's life that would call the tooth fairy. They realize that mom's not perfect, dad doesn't know everything. Y'all can plug your ears for just a second. They realize that we make mistakes, but what they will then look to or look at is how we deal with those mistakes. Are we going to brush over them? Or are we going to admit to them? I mean, you know how humbling it is to go and say, "I'm sorry," or "I was wrong," to a six-year-old. Or to a teenager, that's more humbling. But if you want to have influence in your child's life, you will have to humble yourself and admit when you're wrong in order for them to move in the direction that is right. Noah made God real in his life, in his family. And his credibility was there when his family needed it the most. What's going to happen, mom or dad, when your young lady finds a fellow that you know is out of God's will for her, and you try to talk to her about that? Are you going to have the influence that you need in order to counsel her and try to direct her? I'm not saying that we live our children's lives for them, but God has still given us that prerogative and that wisdom to help them. Or maybe there's a time where our sons are going to need us to speak into their life about a situation. We're going to have that influence in order to help them make right choices in their lives. Listen, we care so much about what others think that sometimes we correct our children or punish them for embarrassing us. That's never going to build credibility. Noah was not concerned with his image. I wonder if his neighbors ever asked him what kind of shed that was. We should take what I would call a teaching time to help our children to grow and to see the importance of living godly principles. Noah made God real in his family, and his credibility was there when his family needed him most. We need to make God real in our lives, in our family lives. Listen, there's going to be a time that they will be grown and out of the house. But do you know that if you have cultivated the relationship as a young person into their junior years, into their high school years, that when they go to college and get married, if you have built up that credibility, you will still have that influence. And they'll be coming back to you and say, "Mom, Dad, what do you think?" "We're thinking about this. I got to ask Dad about this before I'm..." Why? Because you have that relationship that says, you know what? They live a life of walking with God in the real. They're not perfect, but they're real. Listen, I don't know anybody that would want to live a life and have their children turn out like Lot's. But I know every one of us would have our children, by God's grace, to follow us into a boat to save them from the culture that's about to be destroyed. Listen, it's going to take some integrity, it's going to take some character, but it's going to take some credibility. And that is where you reach your influence. allow God to be real in your life and your family's life. Don't be afraid to admit mistakes. Best of all, we have God to help us to get our kid where He wants them to be. He loves them so much more than we do. That's hard for us to remember sometimes. But I'm thankful for the reminder of these two men and the consequences of their very poor and very wise choices. Let's make them an example as we're commanded to do in the New Testament and learn from their mistakes, but also their victories. Let's determine to start right now if we don't have any influence in our kids' lives. Let's start right now and start building our credibility by living a life that is void of hypocrisy. Let's pray. Father, I thank you for your word. I can't imagine two more stark or differentiating circumstances or results from really the same impending circumstances. Your judgment on mankind. Lord, I'm not going to have a raise of hands tonight. But Lord, maybe there's someone in here today that would say, you know, I really don't have that influence in my children's life. I don't have that credibility in it. Maybe there's some things I need to get right, not only with you, God, but with your children. So I pray you would give us the humility and the courage to get those things right if we wronged our children. Lord, help us to talk about some goals with them that we want to accomplish, spiritually speaking. Lord, I thank you for strong families that love you. Help us to raise our children in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. We pray it in His name. Amen.